Welcome to the Lancehurst School Podcast, a history of our school. This episode we go back to the 70s where it all began.
G'day. My name is Lance Holt. Lance Holt School first came to me in 1970, and I worked there and enjoyed my time there for 7 years, and I left in 1977 after 7 years of teaching at the school. The overriding principle of everything is learning should be fun, and we're here to have fun. There's an old saying, if I hear it, I forget. If I see it, I remember. If I do it, I know. Had recently become a father of two small kids, and I wanted my kids to go to a school that I considered to be a good school. Had a psychologist mate of mine who was talking education with him one day, and he came out with a saying, children are in life, not in school. And I thought, that was a really strong point for me, because that was how I was feeling. It coincided with my feelings. And who wants to spend their life sitting on your bum in a classroom all day? I got to go back to second year high school, basically, at Fremantle Boys, where we had a chemistry teacher called Ian Lansky, first year out of college, a fit, good-looking, blonde young bloke, with not too many ideas on how to control a class of rampant 14-year-old brats. And I got the cane from him more time than any other teacher in my whole school career, because I was a smart ass and I just couldn't resist letting out a comment here and there. But we eventually became friends with Ian. At lunchtime, he would go to Frio Park with a whole retinue of kids and say, righto, we'll play Red Rover all over and I'll be in the middle. So this is a great chance for kids to smash a teacher, you know. I think he played in the state rugby team at that stage, and we'd come back into class in the afternoon, grass stains on our shirts, ripped shirts and all that sort of stuff, but he coached the school rugby team, which was undefeated, and he was the reason I got into playing rugby, I think. But he took my brother and me camping at one time down the southwest in the Stirling Ranges and roundabout in his old Vauxhall Wyvern and called Geranium, and taught us to drive. I mean, my brother was probably 14 and I was about 16 on the back roads out there. And we did a lot of climbing in the Stirling Ranges. Kids of today have Google. We had Ian. He's a great referencer about everything. We'd be climbing up Bluff Knoll and you say, oh, see this rock here? All those little ripple marks? That shows that this rock, untold years ago, was underwater. There were so many things that just impromptu lessons on the spot that you didn't think you were having a lesson, but it stuck in your head. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could start a school like this or have a school based on these principles? And I wasn't into starting a school at that stage, but looking back as an older person, early 20s, they were the thoughts in my mind. But he was a great role model because he could fix the car if it buggered up. He could converse so easily with strangers. What we had with Ian was a really great way to learn, and I reckon I might start a school that has a school bus that we can follow the world around instead of just sitting in the classroom watching it go by. And I went to the education department and spoke to the director general. A lovely man, he's so full of fun and joy. Jacques, joie de vivre, guy called Dave Mossenson. Poker face bloke, he used to be a lecturer at Teachers College when I was there. And I said, oh, is there any reason I can't start up a small independent school? And he said, no. And I talked to him for a while, and he told me the hoops I might have to jump through. And then I said, "Oh, would you have any advice for me?" And he said, "Yep, I can think of a whole lot of schools that have gone broke." In the old days, when it used to be Stirling Highway, there's a Catholic church school just past the Rose Hotel. So if you're going out of Frio, on the right, this was St Anne's Catholic Church, and that had an abandoned two-classroom former Catholic school right there on site. And one of my students that I was coaching after school, I told his mum I was going to start this school, and she said, "Oh, you might be interested. There's this school at the back of an abandoned school at the back of the church, only a couple of hundred metres from where they lived." So I said, "Oh, great." So I went to speak to Father Tim, and he was agreeable that they'd lease it to me. And I said, "I reckon I can afford about $320 a year." That was one kid's tuition fees. Put an ad on the radio with 6PR and Gary Meadows, who had a session of talking to mothers every morning. And he read out my ad, and he said, "Oh, this sounds really interesting. I think I'll ring this bloke up." So I got, maybe got 20 minutes of free publicity. No sooner had we hung up, the phone started ringing. I got the last student on my waiting list the day before school started. And then Gary Meadows rang up and said, "Oh, have you got room for one more?" He wanted to get his son in there. And I said, "I haven't really, but I'll make exception for you." But he never came, so that was easy.
Hello, I'm Jeff Summerhayes. I went to Lance Holt in 1970, and when the school first started. I was there for 3 years and enjoyed my whole time with it. It was fantastic. I was having a bit of a hard time in primary school at the time. I was in grade 3, grade 4, and there were so many kids in the class, a lot of numbers in the class at that stage, and just a number really, but the one teacher, and I wasn't getting on with the teacher either very well, and they didn't seem to have that personal-to-person sort of contact or communication in those days. Virtually, I found out about it from my mum was listening to Lance on the radio one day, and he was talking about the principals of the school and the ideas and everything, and sounded great, and sort of inquired all about it, and then stemmed from there. So there was 21 kids in the whole school, 21 boys in the first year, and then Shelley and Anne came in the second year.
Hi, my name is Shelley Davies, and I went to Lance Holt School from 1971 to 73. And I was the first girl to be enrolled, and there was myself and Anne in 1971 with 42 boys. I thought Lance was just wonderful. He was just God. He was just so calm, and when he got upset, you knew it, and you'd be like, "Oh, okay, I've done that again." I remember there was a Bob, because Bob Lynn he started teaching the same year as Anne and I went. And he was away for something. And when he came back, I said something to him, and Lance went, "Hang on a minute," took me into the room, and we had this chat about tact. And I always remember that talk, because he just did it so succinctly. And it's just like, before you open your mouth, always think about the effect on other people.
Anne Bockman, and I was a student at Lance Holt in, must have been 71, 72 and 73, so year 5, year 6 and year 7. As my mum and dad always said, that was the year they voted for Gough Whitlam. They voted Labor. And so they went all kind of for this one year, my parents, who were really strict. Dad's a doctor, mum's a nurse, and very conservative, very, not religious, but very, very old school traditional Australian family. And so they had this kind of year of madness when the world seemed, anything seemed possible, and you voted for Gough and it was all going to happen. And so they kind of got swept up in that fabulous, you know, that feeling of anything was possible in the 70s. And so I was really lucky that I went. Because through Lance Holt, we found out that Shelley was going to be going to the school as well. And at that stage, she was the only girl. And so it seemed to be that, wouldn't it be great if Anne could come, and then at least Shelley would have another, we'd have friends.
They started it the next year. People used to say, why don't you have girls in your school? And I said, because they don't make very good rugby players. This is in the olden days, before we got women's rugby teams and whatnot. So the second year of the school, where we went from 21 boys to 44 kids, I had three girls enrol initially. What girls they were bloody great. They fitted in really well. They got on with each other. And the boys, I believe, treated them very well. They were very happy, and they were a good balance to have in the school. Shelley, Megan and Anne. Frio just grew from there. We had more girls come in. But always they were outnumbered by boys.
And then, of course, in the second year that we were there, Megan Hanley came along, and Kirsten, and there was a couple. I think there was a couple more, but they were younger. And then we were in grade seven. We had a couple more girls come along, and I think then there was probably about seven of us. Oh, that was lots. Yeah.
Being a girl as well, that was the other thing. When Shelley and I went as the first two girls, initially it was, I grew up with brothers, so I've got twin brothers and three brothers. So to me, that was my normal life. If I had to want to play, I had to play with my brothers. And so going into a whole school of just boys was just so much fun. It was just like we weren't treated like girls that had to be girly girls, and we were never told, oh, don't do that, that's girls don't do that. And it was always about, yes, yeah, sure, we're going to play tennis, or yes, yeah, sure, we're going to climb, or yes, yeah, sure, we're going to go across the railway lines, look for dead things, you know. It just was, that's what you did. It's just, that's what you did. Just the personalities of the kids that we were with and where they've gone to in life has just been so amazing. The thing I remember about Michael, and I don't know if he, you know, people don't remember. He came every day with things in his pockets, animals in his pockets. So they were either alive or they were dead. And he would have mice and birds and lizards and stuff. And he just, you'd think, oh, what's he got today? It was really like, you know how kids love gross stuff? And we kind of loved it, but we're all kind of like, gross. But we were fascinated. Michael, what have you got today? And because we lived where North Fremantle was, you know, the across the highway was the railway yards or the railway line, which was, you know, talk about occupational health and safety, completely open. You could walk across, no dramas. Lunchtimes and recess times, he and some mates, or it might have just been him, they'd go across the highway, you know, just disappear. Off they'd go over to the railway lines and pick up whatever was dead. You know, like he'd come back with dead birds and dead things, or he'd come back with something that was nearly dead. Oh, yeah, I'll fix it. Or a dead mouse, or just bizarre. I hadn't come across anyone like that. It was kind of amazing that, like, I think something like that at a normal primary school would have just, they just would have been horrified, you know, they just couldn't have coped with that. Because, you know, he went on to become, like, he's Australia's leading a taxidermist. And, like, when I found that out, I thought, of course. Of course, you know, like it was just, come on, what other thing was he ever going to? And he was like that in year five. That's where he was. And I'm so glad he went to Lance Holt, because if he'd been at a local primary school, that might not have ever been. I don't know where he went to high school after that, but that's what our life was at the day. So,
hello, my name is Michael Buzzer, and I'm the taxidermist, and welcome to my museum. There's a bit. About 30,000 cars a day go past the front door, and they see the museum sign up, and they quite often just think, oh, they find something interesting on the road, they think, oh, that belongs in the museum. You know, all the lovely marsupials or the red-tailed cockatoos, and a lovely peregrine falcon donated not long ago. hit on the road. So the people think, oh yeah, so they give them to me. Well, yesterday I got a life-size tiger, so we took it out of the big case yesterday. So we're picking up tomorrow. So that's on a RAC TV commercial, so I'll be on TV soon. So we're doing all these crazy stuff. You just don't know what you're going to get caught for. So I find you've got to have all these animals.
Can you talk us through a day at Lance Holt School in the 70s?
So no bell. You'd always get together in the morning, start talking about what you're going to be doing. Then you'd all break off into, because it was only a two-roomed school. So, you know, you'd have the grade fives over there doing maths, and you'd have the grade three over here, you know, listening to, you know, on the audio stuff. Then you'd have some, you know, another group doing something else. And then Bob and Lance would just sort of move around, and just that's how they taught. And it all worked out really well, you know. And also I think the thing of calling them Bob and Lance, they were people. They weren't just Mr. Lynn and Mr. Holt, you know, that was crap.
Then I remember too, as part of being in that multi-age group, I remember I used to teach the little ones. And so I was encouraged to be that peer tutor to year threes. I remember I used to write stories that we used to use as reading for the year threes. And I still remember some of the stories today. I mean, they were about little mice and things like that. But I remember being so engaged that the writing had a purpose. It wasn't just writing for writing's sake. It wasn't just handwriting, but the writing had a purpose. And I know that when Bob maybe was doing maths or something with the year fours or whatever group he'd have, I know that Shelley and I, I'm sure it was, there would have been others, but that was our job. Off you go and you do reading with the year threes. So even just having that responsibility or being trusted that our knowledge was not just something we learned in 1, 2, 3, and 4, but something that was transferable or something that we could use to help others, that was so powerful as well, you know. So I think in that way, maybe that's why I'm a teacher now. I just have that. I love the idea that there's something I can do to make someone else's life better.
It was freedom, but it was responsibility. And the catchword was always use your initiative. Like, think about how you're going to get out of this. Don't just think as a child. Think outside the box. Think creatively how you're going to solve this problem. And that's always been, and I've thought, yep, that's exactly right. So that's how I've always dealt with life as well.
There's another worry in the back of one's mind was a visit from the school inspector. I was lucky I met this guy. His name was Harry Horner. A very positive bloke, and we had an amicable conversation. And I said, well, look, what I'd like you to do is save all your judgments till the end of the year, and I've had a chance to see how this experiment can work. So that's what he did. And I think we blew his socks off.
Hello, my name's Anna Gare, and I was lucky enough to be a student at Lance Holt School I started there in 1975. And then later in life, I sent my two kids there, so I was a parent there as well.
At Lance Holt School, we have meeting every morning. Can you tell us what Parliament was?
Like, I had been going to the school before I was six, because often you drop your kids off and the mums and dads would kind of come in sometimes for morning meeting, because morning meeting was the most exciting part of the day. And because kids had freedom of speech, so kids would just get up and talk, and there was always really interesting conversations happening at morning meeting. But even better than morning meetings was Parliament.
Everybody in the school would get together around in Parliament, and you'd throw questions at each other, and why wasn't this done, and why wasn't that done, and how about doing this, or, you know, and then everyone would come together and, okay, so how are we going to solve this? Yeah, I thought that made sense to me.
Yeah, to encourage the younger kids, like if you wanted to be a minister, you had to go home, make a poster or a slogan about what you should be the minister for, and then you had to give a speech about why you should be. So there was posters all up over the school, you know, and the deputy, every minister had to have a deputy, so give the younger kids a go. So a kid might have been going for a minister for health, and he might have missed out. So next day, bring along another poster. I want to be minister for this. I want to be deputy minister for that. I have to get up and make a speech again, different sort of speech, in front of a group. And it's good experience, you know.
It was one parliament, and we had the great lolly debate. So we basically had this great divide within the school, because half of the teachers and half of the kids were for having lollies and the other half were against it. And it went on for weeks, the for and against, and it sort of became a bit of a hung parliament. And I think it was Roger Clifton, our fantastic science teacher, who we had back then. He said, "I've got a solution." You had to put up your hand and you had to go through the speaker and everything. He said, "I've got a solution. I think we should do an experiment. And I think we should get two white lab rats and feed one of them on junk food and one of them on proper healthy food." And we thought that was the most exciting thing ever. And in the end, it would reveal what, you know, whether you should have sugar or not. And so one of the rats we fed, we used to have a place around the corner called Bright Spot, where we used to always go for our lunches, and they had the best matchsticks. And so we fed one rat matchsticks and Coca-Cola. And then the other rat got rat food, but then we went to Ceres Health Food Shop, which was, I think, one of the mums was working in Fremantle, and we got, you know, alfalfa sprouts and stuff like that. So one was on healthy food, one was on sugar-loaded food, and the sugar-loaded rat got so obese and fat and just looked like he was going to drop off any day. But the healthy food rat died first. And it was like, whoa, this debate, it really did. Like even parents were coming in and trying to put in their votes, and teachers were dividing against other teachers, kids weren't talking to other kids. In the end, they did end up actually banning lollies from the school. But we worked our way around it, because apricot bars, summer rolls, sesame bars, they're a health food, aren't they? The kids decided they were anyway, so we kind of won.
So the kids moved that they start a garden, because it was couch grass in summertime that hasn't been watered for years. It's a pretty dead sort of environment. Anyway, the kids got themselves in pairs, and it was a cyclone wire fence about this high, divided off into about 3 metre lengths. Kids are wonderful the way they make games of things. You know, these gardens were magnificent little limestone rocks right around the edges, and come to school early so they could water their plants, and we had a couple of wheelbarrows on the go. So that's not just the end of it. Wheelbarrows equals wheelbarrow races, wheelbarrow rides. Cost you 2 cents a ride for this service. Someone else had undercut them. Only cost 1 cent for this one. And they'd be racing around the block. And they'd say, okay, because there was a deli just over the road on the corner of the highway. Okay, we'll take you up to the deli and for a sip of your can of Coke.
The other thing about Parliament is, because Lance was so big into camps and getting the kids out of the classroom and into life, we used to vote on where we'd go for camps. So people would come up with different ideas and then we'd all vote. So whoever won, we'd go there. But the teachers were very clever. They used to get all of us kids to elect ministers for different areas and jobs around the school, and there'd be a deputy minister for each area, so we'd have the minister for health. Now, they were responsible for cleaning the toilets and taking out the bins, and it was such a pleasure, you know, it was such a highlight if you got voted in as a minister of health even, and really clever. And then they had minister for office duties. Which I did do once. I think I helped out once because one of the ministers was away. But that would involve going up to the office, getting any letters that they needed posting, and then we'd walk down to Fremantle Post Office. And we had ministers, the minister for sport, and they would put forth motions like, okay, I think we should go to the beach today, or we'll go down to the Esplanade Park and play British Bulldog, because Lance was really into British Bulldog, the sort of rugby tackling game, or, you know, go snorkeling or something. And we'd all vote, and whatever, you know, the strongest vote would win, and that's what we'd do that day.
Anyway, initially I started off, I had the power of veto. I thought I will not participate in the debate, but I will say, if you guys are going across the mark, I'll say, no, you can't do that. Anyway, I decided after 6 months, I'm going to pit my wits against theirs and they can outvote me. So kids got their heads, oh, this is good. See, we'll see how dinkum this is. Right. Late afternoon, the kids, they were having a session of Parliament. One kid gets up and reads out his bill. I move that school knock off every day at 3 o'clock instead of 3:30. I thought this would be passed unanimously, but there was fierce debate. Our parents pay good money to get us an education here. I don't think they'd like this idea. Other kids are saying, my reading age has improved out of leaps and bounds, you know. This is I reckon I deserve a bit of a holiday. So it went on and it was narrowly passed. And there was one kid looked at the clock and said, 3 o'clock. There was a stampede for the door. And I stood out on the veranda in my booming voice and I said, hey, all right, you're knocking off at 3 o'clock, but you didn't say what time school starts. Tomorrow morning, you've got to be here by 8 o'clock. Any kid who's not here at that time will spend double time in at lunchtime making up for it. They all ran for their lives full of glee. I got home, my phone starts ringing. Hey, Lance, what's this about? Kids have got to be at school at 8 o'clock in the morning. My kid has to catch 3 buses to get to school. I said, look, don't blame me. It was your kid who moved the bill. And I told the kids, well, there's a way around it, but I'm not telling you what it is. So they had to do research on how do you rescind a bill. So they put up with that for about 2 weeks before they found out how to do it. But they feel, you know, we do have power. We can organise things. You know, I think that was a very important part of it.
Was there a bus at the school and did you get to go to school camps?
Yeah, so we had a bus straight off. The MTT painted it orange. They said you can have any colour you like. And I thought school buses are orange. That's a well-recognised symbol, so I'll get that. I'll get it painted. And we had a big competition to name the bus. And whoever picked the winning name would have the privilege of sculling a can of Coke, refilling it and then with water and pouring it into the radiator and christening the bus. So the name of the bus that was decided upon was Leaping Learner. Went on our first ever camp to Stirling Ranges. What happened? We had to go through the most amazing thunderstorm and electrical storm and the bus was full of water, leaks everywhere. And one of the kids stood up and he said, I move that we rename this bus Leaking. So it was for thereafter. My policy was that we would have a camp every school term.
And the camps, oh, they were just the best, you know, like, you know. We had camps up in the wheat belt where we all got billeted to different people. That was interesting. Lots of camps over at Rottnest, up in the, then camps at Mangidore, which was a scout camp up in the hills, down to Albany. That was a good one. We stayed at the old quarantine station. Oh, my God, they were just all over the place.
The thing that I was most excited about was that we were going to have lots of camps because that's what Lance was into. He was into getting the kids out of the classroom and, you know, into the environment and it, because I think he truly believed that that was the best way for people to learn about life and learn, yeah.
21 boys from one teacher climbing Bluff Knoll and it wasn't exactly a well-worn track in those days. It was just a thin goat trail, really. But, yeah, and then Lance said, oh, make sure you wear jumpers. It gets cold up there, you know. And then halfway up there, we had our jumpers off down to our singlets and it was boiling. So it was quite funny. But, yeah, there was a few kids that were quite sort of taken back by the whole thing because as we got halfway up, we were going single file in
on the trail, and one kid in the middle just suddenly froze, and he looked down and saw the difference in height and everything, and just froze, and no one could move. And Lance was off the front or the back, but he was sort of trying to talk to the boy and calm him down and everything. So, look, it's fine, I'm going to be fine, no problem. And I think actually some of the other students, the boys were next to him, he started talking to him and calming him down. And then after, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, he was fine, and we just kept moving on slowly, and eventually we got up the top. But it was certainly much quicker coming down than it was going up.
I went to Rottnest in 73 or 74, I think, and I don't think we took the years 1 and 2 to Rotto, but we took the rest of the kids, so it was about 60 kids. We'd studied a fair bit about the history of it, and one of the kids in my rugby team, who was by that time about 17, I think he's got a PhD now, but I put the hard word on him to come along on camp. He could bring his girlfriend, who was a trainee teacher, and I'd like you to do a thing on shipwrecks around Rotto. So that's what he did. And we had like a treasure hunt where you had to go to different points and read a map to get to where you had to go. Kids had a good time at Rotto. The parents and I had it down to a fine art, those who came to camp. I'd just sleep in the mornings, and the parents would get them breakfast. They'd have stuff put out, the kids would get their own breakfast and stuff like that. We had this bloke, Lloyd Davies, the father of the first girl to enrol at the school. And he's a barrister by trade. Anyway, he used to come along. He was nicknamed to the kids Sergeant Davies. He'd wear a big apron with floral yellow flowers on it and a similar tall chef's hat, Sergeant Davies. And he'd spend all day over putting a lamb on a spit. So he'd spent the whole day, you know, sweat pouring off him, drinking a glass of red wine as he's bloody pouring red wine into the sheep.
I remember being at Rottnest at one stage, and Dad was cooking a leg, must have been half a sheep, because there were that many kids and, you know, family and that sort of, everyone had come over. And it took all day. Of course, during that day, everyone's, you know, we're all sent off around the island to do activities and that, and come back and the lamb is still not cooked, and we go, oh my God, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, Rottnest was, I remember the big sheep on a spit, a whole sheep, and the fire there, and it was going around, and I can remember it tasting, it was beautiful, yeah. And
there was one of the other mothers who'd come along to help in the kitchen, but all she wanted to do was hang her smalls above the stove, because that's where the heat was, and Dad was going, nah, you're not having this in the kitchen. Throw them out. Yeah. It was good fun having them around the place. But, of course, I mean, they were the cooks. So, I mean, I was too busy playing with all the, you know, the other kids to worry about, yeah, parents, who needs them, you know, like.
There was probably maybe two or three at least parents used to come along and help out with the cooking and all that. My mum did one year with a couple of them, and I know Shelley's parents did as well. They were quite regulars in quite a few of the camps, because they were really good with organising and cooking on a large scale as well. So that was, yeah, really big help. Yeah.
The thing about Lance Holt's school was that there was such a variety of teachers there. So you'd kind of go through phases of falling in love with different teachers. I remember Mary, who would teach us how to cook and make bread. I loved working with her. And then Maida, she used to play the piano, and then you'd love doing English and spending time with her. I think all of the teachers at some stage played a really important part in my life. So, for example, maths teacher, Mike Snadden, he was awesome. I think he worked out that I wasn't really interested in doing maths, and somehow he got me interested, and I think it was taking me taking me down to Cut It Out in Perth. He knew I loved cooking, and he sort of said, hey, how about we go to Cut It Out in Perth and I'll get you a whole knife set and everything. And the whole exchange of buying the knives and everything, there was a bit of maths in that. And I just thought he was the best thing ever after that. And I went to a lot of maths classes after that. Lance Holt was open to kids, you know, when they had ideas, if they wanted to do it and they were passionate about something, you were allowed to do it. And you learn a lot with cooking. I mean, we've got Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden programs now, because how many things, you know, all the different areas that you learn. You've got maths, you've got science, you've got health, you've got nutrition, you've got, you know, there's so many elements to cooking and serving and profit and, you know, everything.
Can you tell us how Tuck Shop first began?
When I first started going to the school in, I think it was grade one, we had a parent there called Mary Tarrant, who later became a teacher and then the coordinator. But she used to come in as a mother and teach us how to make bread. And she grew sprouts, and, you know, it was the 70s, it was pretty cool. And I can remember being switched on, like the kitchen was my favourite place anyways. We decided that we needed to raise money for the school. So we decided we'd start up a canteen for the school and invite people from off the street into our canteen. And the teachers were thrilled about it because they said we could do it down in the art room. But of course, there was paint everywhere. So we scrubbed the tables and cleaned it all up, and we put down, you know, white art paper and put a sign up on the door, 3-course meal for $1. Which was probably pretty expensive back then. When I think about it, I think, gosh, because I remember Mum used to only give us 58 cents for lunch back then. But it was $1, and people came in off the street. And actually, I don't know how long we did it for. Like, timelines are really weird. We might have done it for 3 months or 3 weeks. To me, it felt like we did it for a very long time. But I do know that Megan Kuhn Ward, who was a parent there, came in off the street as she worked up the road and came in and had lunch. And after she sat down at our little canteen, I mean, she ended up sending all three of her kids there. She got the school instantly. But we'd go and buy a few chickens and some salad ingredients, whip up a salad with our homemade sprouts, cut up the chicken. And sometimes we'd start with the chicken noodle soup for 3-course meal. So it'd be chicken noodle soup. Chicken was really in those days, 70s. Chicken and salad, and then we'd do jelly and ice cream for dessert. And, all for $1.
Can you tell us if it was a community school? And did the parents help like they do now?
There was a lot of involvement from parents. So because we were such a small school, and because of the nature of the parents that were attracted to the school, we had these experts. It was just this, I haven't come across such it was almost like a pressure cooker of amazing talents. And the fact that these parents would come in and be our experts and be our teachers was, I don't know anywhere where it happens. Hopefully it still happens at Lance Holt. It's just amazing. I remember being taught musical appreciation by the man who was the first cellist in the WA Symphony Orchestra. And I think Kovacs was their name. And I can't remember the lady's name, but she was amazing. And we used to get on the train at North Fremantle at, I don't know, 1 o'clock. And so even to get kids to do this today, you've got to fill out forms and insurance, and it's just this nightmare. So there must have been some kind of, I give permission for my child to. So we used to get on the train. We'd travel to his house. He would play the cello for us in the front of his house, and he'd play these pieces, and I would just die, because it was amazing. And then we'd cook, because they were Hungarian, and then we'd cook in her kitchen Hungarian food, and then we'd get on the train and come home. It was like, oh my God, how in life would you ever know someone, like, to be taught music by the first cellist from the WA Symphony Orchestra, you know.
There was a great activity we did where we were given a clue, and we sort out the clue, then you had to work out which bus to catch to get to the next clue. And it ended up, like, we went from North Fremantle up to, must have been in Shenton Park somewhere, because I'd never been there before. Like, so it was all a complete thing. And we actually went up and learned how to cook. And that was, like, that was a really big excursion. And there was just a few of us who did it on the bus by ourselves, organised to get the clues, all that sort of stuff. And that was just amazing. So, yeah. And through her and her husband, we did a lot of Philharmonic, you know, the old classics and that sort of stuff. And what does the music do to you and where does it take you? And, you know, just things that, I mean, I'm sure that a lot of kids these days don't listen to classical.
And then I know we had an artist. She's a jeweller and she taught us jewellery. She was an artist. She taught us art stuff. We did tie dyeing. We did paint, you know, anything she could teach us, we did. I remembered going to the CSIRO labs in Floriat Park and doing chemistry. Imagine letting 12-year-olds into a lab now. Again, it just wouldn't happen. I remember going to Waite and doing into the engineering and architecture department and doing engineering. 12, 10, 11, 12. God, what's with that? You know, it's just amazing.
And depending on where we were, then depending on what we would go and see. I remember going to see chicken hatchery and, you know, egg farm and things like that. Things that you would normally not ever see.
Just you know, all the different factories, you know, going through and a chicken factory and how you buy a chicken. All you never forget it when you see all those poor chickens hanging upside down. You know. And I can even remember if they do these sort of things today, but I remember they all gave us a little chicken to take home when we went to the eggs, when we were seeing more little hatchlings. And I remember all the kids all giving them to me because I was a nature lover, of course, and so I'd have all these little yellow fluffy chickens to take home.
Yeah, sometimes Lance would organise things sort of like a week ahead or a couple of weeks ahead, depending on who he contacted. Yeah, and prearranged things. So we went out and did day trips to see how. I think we went to the West Australian in Perth one day to see how the newspaper got printed, you know, and right from the word go, how they sort of came up with the articles and then went through the editing stage and into the printing, and then we walked right through the whole factory, you know.
I remember, and I'm pretty sure we were in year seven, the high school students had a strike, and one of the leaders was, I think it was one of the boys from Wesley. And Megan and Shelley and I went and we interviewed. That was part of our social activism as well. We went out there as part of our language and literacy, writing. We had to interview the leader of this strike action and what are you striking for? And all it was really, and we were on the front page of the West Australian. We still had the photos of that and everything. And it was really interesting that was what we did. So, again, we had to write in action, like, so it wasn't just writing an essay about my favourite dog, it was a persuasive text about should the students have gone on strike. Some of the parents were journalists, so I think we even had someone come in and tell us about how one writes an article for the newspaper. So for me, it was some of the most meaningful education experiences that I'd had, that for my type of learning completely made sense. And so for me, that's what led me to be interested in education and interested in my own education and that intellectual world and stuff like that.
We did the actual school letter, the school newsletter, and it was part of our job to go out and get advertising for the actual paper, you know. It was quite amazing actually because, well, for kids that age, you know, it was quite a daunting task because Lance says, right, now I want you to, I think we got into into groups of three or four, and then what we had to do is go up to the phone box, get some money, put the money in the phone box and ring a proper business in Fremantle somewhere and then arrange to meet them at a certain time and say, would you like to advertise in our school magazine? It was $10 for a full page and $5 for a half page or something, you know. And we had to go and arrange to meet the boss of the company or whatever and say, you know, this is what we want to do. This is our school and this is where we are and would you like to advertise in our paper? So that was, I think, remember, that was quite a daunting thing for quite a few kids to sort of actually get on the phone and talk to a stranger and arrange for something to do, yes, arrange for that to happen, you know, so.
The great thing about Lance Holt was that it wasn't afraid to be experimental either. So I can remember at one stage, Lance loved changing things up. He was so exciting. I was a little bit scared of him when I was little because he was such a big character. And he wasn't scared of yelling at kids and, you know, putting them back in their spot either if they were doing something really wrong. But he had such a great sense of fun about him and adventure. And he said, right, because kids weren't turning up to classes. At school meeting, he said, right, all the teachers are going to start teaching in their classes. We had a stage for a while where we were rotating. So one teacher would be the maths teacher, another teacher would be science, and you'd rotate and move around the school and go to the different teachers. Maida would do English. She was a wonderful English teacher. She'd teach us French by playing the piano and making us sing French songs. But what the teachers had to do was be really interesting because, and this was Lance's very clever idea, he said, you can go to any class you want to go to. The teachers will start at 8:30 or 9 o'clock whenever they started and you go to the class you want to go to. What it did was it made teachers become more interesting teachers and it made kids go to the things that they were interested in.
I think at the end of 1974, so maybe 1975, and the reason we moved, we'd heard a lot of rumours like containers were exploding on the wharf just in terms of numbers, and there was talk about expanding the container terminal through the school site. I thought, oh that's a worry. But the Catholics in the end decided they wanted to create a Croatian Catholic centre. So they wanted to take over the school again, make the whole church centred around Croatian community activities. I just got the whole school on the bus and we started right down the far end of Frio near the Esplanade, walking up and down every street, Pakenham, Henry, Mowat and Cliff, I knew well from my postman's days, and looking at every building that might double up as a school. We finally decided on number 10 Henry Street. It started off its life as the Port Print printing works. It was underneath, printing presses. Its next iteration, I think, was as Weber Furniture. Used to sell fine furniture, so they had all this classy wallpaper right along one wall. And they must have moved out because they moved to Atterdale. And the council must have taken, they probably had a lease or something, the council took over. By this time I'd developed a pretty good relationship with Frio City Council. So I went and said we'd like to lease the building. And that's how it started.
Best thing about Lance Holt was that the city was our playground. It was so amazing. It was a small school, but the city was our playground. And back then, as I said before, there were fewer cars and everyone knew who we were. We knew the names of all the shopkeepers. We'd go down to the wharf, climb under on all the beams underneath the wharf, eat our lunch, count rats. We were wharf rats. But it was so exciting, so many risks, you know. In those days you could take risks and no one was sued or, you know, questioned. It was just, it was an amazing, I think the world was much easier back then, and an incredible experience as a child to have that freedom, the freedom of speech, and, you know, it felt like you owned the school and you're a big part of the school, and yeah, it was amazing.
Lots of laughing, lots of joking, lots of music in the school. You felt free to be a kid, you know, it wasn't just... I think that's what I remember the most, the quietness in classrooms at Richmond Primary School, you know, that, and we could be quiet when we needed to, but just that talking, that noise, that music, that movement, that energy, I think, is what kind of I remember most about my 5, 6, 7 years there. Yeah.
When you're a kid, remember those little things, how Lance always... like he was a big kid and we always used to follow him around and he used to join in and he always had a joke and, you know, just, yeah, he always made things work.
I hadn't owned a pair of shoes until I went into year eight. I mean, I didn't need shoes. I just had a pair of thongs or a pair of sandals. That was it. Didn't need anything else.
Yeah, it was really that self-motivation which, you know, was really encouraged, for sure.
I mean, he really let you know what was going on and when it was going on. Like, there was no, if you were straight, he was straight. And I think that was the best thing. Like, it really taught people how to be upfront. Be responsible for what you're doing, for what you're saying. Like, you can't just keep on blaming somebody else.
It seemed very symbiotic. I think that's what I took with me as I went up into high school. And what shocked me the most was how valued I felt in my understandings, how I could negotiate the curriculum that I was learning, how I could be part of a team that was all heading in a direction, and it wasn't just about the teacher telling me what to do and me going along with it. So there was this really nice blend of I felt listened to, I felt valued, I felt engaged, I felt encouraged to be the best that I could be. And I suppose that even though I can't remember the specifics of lots of little things, there was all that kind of stuff.
I think it's given me more of a view of trying to figure out things creatively, not just this is the way you do it. I think it's given me a warmer feeling towards education and to ways that you can bring up kids, as opposed to just being straight down the line.
The highlights in my life are the other students and the relationships that we had.
Yeah, so yeah, Lance was brilliant. Best teacher I've ever had in my entire life.
The overriding principle of everything is learning should be fun. And we're here to have fun.
Thank you, and make sure you listen to the next episode, The 80s.
This has been a Temperley production.